How we feed our dogs. Is it as important as what we feed our dogs? I guess that's a debate that you will have to have with yourself, because every dog is an individual. And when I say dog, I also mean cats, because you know that even though cats and dogs, yes, are different species, and yes, we do need to feed them slightly differently, in general, a lot of what we do for our dogs is also applicable to our cats. So dogs, cats, how we feed them can absolutely be as important as what we feed them. So for today's episode, I decided to go back in the archive because the last time I did this, you guys absolutely loved it. So we're going to do a short clip from a previous episode with Dr. Carol Smea from the Mine Pet Platter. Now, I've been feeding my dog Kimberly off of the Mine Pet Platter for maybe 2.5 years now. She loves it. And I love feeding her off of it because of everything I learned from Carol about why it is so important to it. How we feed our dogs is so, so incredibly important, and everything I learned about it. So I'm going to just pull the absolute best clips from that older archived episode and give them to you now. Even if you did listen to that episode, I promise it was a long time ago. You might want a refresher. Even if you're already feeding your pet off of the Mind Pet Platter, I promise you're going to want to hear this again because you're a nerd like I am and you want to know all these things, and sometimes we need reminders of it. So why is it so important that how we feed our pets is just as important as what we feed our pets? Here we go. Have you tried training methods that just didn't work? Do you feel that your pet is not getting his or her nutritional needs met? Are illnesses and bad behavior your daily norm? You're gonna wanna join me on the Pet Parenting Reset, where you'll hear interesting and informative interviews and get solutions to all your pet problems. I'm your host, Jessica L. Fisher. I'm trying very hard to get more and more education out to people because I personally feel like that's what our society is lacking, is just like, you need to learn, like, stop reading headlines and dive deeper.
Exactly. I hear you, because there's so much false information going on out there. And so I'm finding that more and more people want to talk because I'm really into the science of things. And so they're fascinated. It's like, yes, this is what we need more of. So we've gotten a good group of people together and we're forging the way. So we can talk about that later then.
Absolutely. But Carol, I am just so thrilled to have you on. I know we chatted a little bit when we met. This is so in my wheelhouse and something that I don't often get to bring to my viewers and listeners, because I'm just very, like, I'm very science focused in what I love. I just love the science behind things, and especially the psychology behind things. So, and this is what you do, right? You study animals and the psychology of animals. So tell me a little bit about yourself and what led you to decide to study wolves and big cats.
Well, it's an interesting story. I originally got my PhD in psychology and sociology and was working with global food companies, National Institute of Health, FDA, and trying to understand human feeding dynamics. And then we had a little puppy named Pip, who, little 15-pound Havanese, who had a great appetite, and she used to scarf down her food, eating from a bowl, and let out the most horrendous belch that I couldn't have anybody over because they'd have tears streaming down. It was like a 500-pound football player letting out a belch. So one day, I was cutting up some chicken breasts for her on a cutting board. And my daughter said, "Don't throw the scraps and juices away, Mom. Give it to Pip." So I put the board down And for the next 15 minutes, this dog was totally engaged, circling it, licking, just enjoying herself. And she picked her head up and licked her chops and said, "Thanks, Mom." So I told my husband, unfortunately, he passed away. He was the designer behind the product. But I told him what happened, and he said, "Eureka." And so we started talking through the dynamics of what happened. So I took all of my research experience, the tools that I knew about, and just dove in to the animal world. And I understood that, for example, dogs, their closest ancestor is the gray wolf. They share over 99% DNA. And of course, wild cats for our common house cats, that really animals are instinctive creatures. All of their behaviors still operate. We see it day in and day out. So I thought, you know, we changed their feeding ecology. They were out in the wild. They had to kill prey. They had to deconstruct carcasses. And we forced them through evolution and the domestication of dogs, we forced them into a bowl. And when you think about it, most of the calls that vets get, it's related to eating, digestion issues, anxiety issues. So I said, let's go back and really understand feeding from a dog and cat's perspective. And so that's what led me there. And I volunteer at zoos, and I reached out to animal experts, preserves, you know, just building this knowledge. And I watched so many tapes of deconstructing carcasses. And for many of your viewers, many of the zoos have carcass feedings, which people can observe, where a full carcass is, for example, put in with the African wild dog who closely resembles sort of the wolf. You can see their actual and how they deconstruct carcasses. And it just opens a whole entirely different view. These wolves and wild cats are programmed to survive in the wild, and the instincts that they have, the feeding behaviors that they have, when you understand that, then you can understand how to feed them the way that they're meant to be fed, which is naturally. And that's kind of a quick summary. How's that, Jessica?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And I do just want to say I'm terribly sorry to hear that you lost your husband.
Thank you.
Sure, that was a big loss, always a big loss. But it sounds especially...
This is a legacy of love, and that's what makes the pet platter so special as well, is each day that I carry on, he's with me. This is what we really committed our lives to doing, and he was a pet lover like you wouldn't believe, so it's a joy to be doing it. Right. Well, and this is why one of the reasons I'm working with more and more veterinarians, and you know, I've spoken with Dr. Judy and Julie at Adored Beast and all of these people. And, you know, just being able to say the bowl is counterproductive. It, you know, it was for our convenience, not theirs. So what veterinarians are saying now is this is the species appropriate feeder. It's a species appropriate way to feed your pet. So I'm almost looking at it as a prescription for our dogs and cats because it does benefit their health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious. So to me, I'm very like, we need to be as species appropriate as possible with our dogs and our cats. But there are some people out there that just haven't quite grasp that, maybe don't understand. They're very much into the convenience of, you know, everything available modern day. Why right. do you think it is so important that the animals that now live in our house that we have
our dogs for sure. We've, you know, domesticated our cats. I think there's an argument to say that we're currently domesticating cats. But why do you think it's so important that we try to mimic those eating habits of their wild counterparts?
Well, it's a great question. And I guess the best way to approach this is to actually talk about what a bowl does during the feeding process. And first of all, you're asking your dog or cat to put their face into a hole, okay, which is dark. And it blocks their peripheral vision. And believe it or not, dogs and cats both have superior night vision as well as motion detection. So by having food bouncing around in the bowl, you're also increasing anxiety. But the other thing is the bowl is not designed to fit the nose of the dog, the snout. It's constantly banging up against. And if there's one thing I can convey to your viewers today, dogs and cats see the world through their noses. Dogs have over 100 million scent sites, depending on the breed, going up to 600 million compared to our 6 million. And cats have over 200 million scent sites. So this is their most powerful sense. And by having the food sit piled in a bowl, they can't engage their sense of smell. So it's like feeding them blindfolded. That would be an analogy for us. And then the other thing is when their peripheral vision is blocked and then, you know, they're sort of struggling with the motion and everything going on in the bowl, their hearing is the most second most powerful sense. And they hear at much higher frequencies and hear decibels that we can't even hear. So when your dog is eating, and especially if you're feeding in a kitchen in a bowl, you have blocked off this wonderful sensory circuit they have to protect themselves and their food in the wild. So that actually heightens anxiety. And the one area you never want to serve your pet is in a corner because it's the most threatening situation for them to be in, which leads to food dumping, food relocation. And in my experience, the bulk of finicky eating comes from anxiety-ridden feeding situations. In fact, I had one pet parent come up to me at the Raw Natural Summit that dogs naturally used to have. And she said, "I've been feeding my dog for over 10 years by hand. She will never, never eat out of any other feeding device." So we gave her a pet platter to try and said, "Take it for free. If it works, come back." And she came back the next day and she said, "I can't believe it. My dog won't eat out of my hand anymore." So the first most important thing is this whole notion they are programmed for survival and for resource allocation. Let's honor that in a way that isn't contained in this small area. The other thing I'd like to say is when food is piled high, what we're basically doing is telling the dog, don't worry about exploring, sniffing, forage, licking, any of that. So they tend to gulp their food. But in a lot of the video analysis we've done, dogs learn how to get to food as fast as they can. They're masterful creatures at that. So what they learn to do is use their lower jaw to push the food up against the side of the bowl, which creates a backwards conveyor. So they're actually taking in more food and air, which coagulates going down because they do not have amylase in their saliva. So goes down, plops in the stomach. And that's why bowl feeding increases the likelihood of GDV and what is commonly referred to food bloat. And I don't know if people are necessarily aware of this, but food bloat isn't GDV, but it's when large volumes of food and air hit the stomach and it can imitate it and cause a lot of stomach distress. So piling food, it's sort of like us eating from a fast food container. You never enjoy the food. You'll finish the whole box and still feel hungry. That's sort of what we're doing to our pet. And then the last thing is, when it's sitting in a bowl, your dog and cat have no control over their feeding territory. And out of all of our research, we find having that control is so important. I've actually observed wolves in the wild who have small prey like a rabbit, and they'll put it down. They're sort of looking around, and another wolf can come in a split second. It looks like a streak across the screen. You can't even see the wolf in form because they're so quick. So that's why it's important to have a broader area where the dog can circle and feel in control. It's just like when they go to sleep, they'll circle to make sure it's a safe area for them to be in. So everything they do is instinctive. Their drives are all designed to help them survive.
Wow, there was so much in there, and I thought of so many things.
I'm sorry, and I haven't even talked about the pet platter yet.
It's okay.
And then the other one is in terms of lick-type mats. Again, they're designed to prohibit, and so food gets caught in those corners, and what ends up happening is a highly repetitive licking, which leads to obsessive compulsive licking. And not only does it create strain in the neck muscles, but it also can lead to negative behavior and a negative relationship with food. So I think that's why everything with the pet platter is the scoops, the ridges, everything about it is designed so the pet can get to it. He has to work mm-hmm. for it. But he's being rewarded by getting the food as well. It's when they smell food and they can't get to it because of their survival instinct, their feast or famine drive, they have to keep on working to get to that food. So anything you use, it should be something that your pet can actually obtain the food. If not, you're creating a frustrating feeding or snack experience for them.
That is so interesting. I have used licky mats in the past, but I have never bought the more difficult ones. They're always like the super easy ones. And my husband has always been like, why are you using, it doesn't make sense to him. And so we don't use them very often, but I've never recommended or tried a slow feeder. Something in the back of my mind has always been like, something just doesn't quite feel right about this. Though I've never said anything negative about them. Yeah. I've just never recommended them. So that's really interesting to me. I love the insight that you have on that. I did also want to ask you a little bit more about the platter, because you did design it to help dogs and cats have a more realistic eating experience. You've kind of alluded to that a little bit, but what is the focus behind the creation of the platter?
Well, believe it or not, we were in development for almost 5 years. And I went and did the research with wild animals and collecting observational data and talking to experts in the field. And I have to admit, I spend more time at the zoo than I do with people. And love every minute of it. There's always something to learn there. But so I basically picked out the instinctive feeding behaviors we wanted to replicate with our feeder. Then my late husband, who was the product designer, he went through about 7, 8, maybe 9 renditions because it had to be marketable. So we had some really interesting designs, to say the least, but we tested it out just about on 500 cats and dogs. We wanted to make sure that what we brought to the marketplace was going to work. And I know this looks very simple, but believe me, getting here was not an easy thing. So the whole purpose is we picked a shape that was large enough that the dog and cat could feel control over, that their bodies could properly circle and reduce that anxiety of the fear of somebody coming in and taking it. Then we made the surface wide enough to spread the food all across. And that way, there's no way they can gulp up their food. There's no sides to push against it. And another thing that we learned in the feeding of it is when you look at a wolf eating off of a carcass, they eat over the carcass, and it's a convex position. When animals eat from a bowl, their neck curves to scoop, which leads to a concave, which is why many people, especially if you serve kibble, you'll see your dog trying to push the kibble down their throat because they're taking in too much and the neck is curving in terms of scooping it up. So the natural position is to eat over. And then because the food is spread all over the platter, they're pulling up smaller pieces, but they're also exploring it at the same time. So they're making food choices, which helps stimulate their minds. But it's also a communication to the pet parent to say, these are the foods I really like. Okay, they're going to go after what they need nutritionally and what they like. And they all have individual sort of tastes when you think about it. Then the scoops here resemble the ends of bones. It was designed to fit the shape of the tongue. And this promotes positive licking. And in contrast to the lick type devices that are out there, this releases positive endorphins because they can get to the food and feel success and be rewarded for that effort within each scoop. So it's one of the core differences between the pet platter and other feeders. Then this outer edge here sort of resembles the rib cage where food can be stuffed in there and animals can pull it out, sort of resembling the pulling off meat from a bone. But the other thing is you can freeze foods and liquids on the pet platter. So a lot of people take goat's milk or bone broth and freeze it on there for a special treat, which is great fun for them. And so it does resemble the carcass, and it just taps into what they know how to do instinctively, but all the anxiety is reduced because they're in control. They can get to every particle of food on there, and they can totally see around them. Their sensory circuit is saying, you don't have to worry, everything's fine. So you'll see dogs actually calm down, eat slower, and have a more satisfactory meal.
Thank you again for sticking around. This has been an incredible recap of this archived episode with Dr. Carol Smeya of the Mine Pet Platter. As I did with the last one, if you guys love this type of episode where I go back and pull like a really incredible clip from an archive, you have to let me know. You have to let me know you like this kind of thing so I can do it more often for you. I was looking at the numbers on the last one and you guys rocked it. I know that this is the kind of stuff you want, but you have to tell me. Also, make sure to go over to Instagram. If you're not already following me on Instagram, I'm at the Pet Parenting Reset. Send me a message, reply to a story, comment on a reel, whatever floats your boat. Let me know that this is the kind of episode that you really, really love, sprinkled in between some of the longer form interviews, which are also absolutely wonderful. And I love bringing them to you, but these can be just as impactful. So make sure to seek me out over there on the Instagrams, as us older generations would say. And I'm at The Pet Parenting Reset. Guys, until next week, I will be bringing you another long form, brand new interview episode next week. So make sure you are sticking around for that. If you're not already following, follow the podcast, and I will talk to you next week. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Make sure that you're following the show so you never miss an episode. And please take a moment to rate the show on your podcast app. I'd also love it if you'd share this podcast with your friends and family so that they can benefit from the information to help their pets live long, happy lives too. Don't forget to take advantage of this special discount as a listener today and get access to over 100 online videos and my online dog training, The Furry Family Coach. Just go to thefurryfamilycoach.com and use code podcast at checkout to get your first month for only $7. That's thefurryfamilycoach.com and use code podcast at checkout to get your first month for only $7. I can't wait to have you join and see you on the inside.